So we're here right now with Representative Bryce Edgman from District 37. He is the House Rep for this district, and he's in the studios right now. Bryce, thank you so much for coming today.
Boy, it's my pleasure, and good afternoon to you and to all your listeners.
So, Representative Edgman, right now you're in Sandpoint. You're going around and talking to people about various topics, but there's one big topic that at the town hall last night and probably everywhere that you've been harping on, and that's what everyone's talking about, of course, the budget for the state of Alaska and the current fiscal crisis. Some interesting topics that came up yesterday. What is your mission as you go around and talk to people about the budget?
Well, I think it's an excellent first question. And the reason being is that Alaska essentially is at a turning point in terms of its reliance on the oil industry to fund state government. We've enjoyed for the last 40 years basically being able to turn on the spigot from the oil industry and the revenues that we get from the deposits up in the North Slope, and been able to sort of be on cruise control for the most part with a number of ups and downs over the years. But essentially since 1977, been able to turn to the oil revenues to fund some 90% of all state government. Well, here we are in 2016, and somewhat rather suddenly, the last couple of years more prominently, we've seen the oil prices get very low, and that in concert with oil production, which has been dipping down, or declining some 4 to 5 to 6% annually, we're now looking at oil revenues that are just a fraction of what they were a few years ago. And with that small amount of oil revenues, we're having what's called a fiscal gap that we have been fortunate enough to fill with savings accounts that we've accumulated over the last 10 years or so, when oil prices were high and the production was still fairly consistent at that point. So we find ourselves here in 2016 with essentially a year's worth of savings left and a gap of about $3 billion. And some fundamental questions before Alaskan voters relative to, you know, what do we do to fill that gap? Do we continue to cut state government? Do we look at enacting a lot of statewide taxes, taxes on industries, taxes on cigarettes and alcohol and everything else that's taxable throughout the state? Do we use the earnings of the permit fund like the governor has proposed? So these are big questions that I feel that my constituents in House District 37 deserve to have the opportunity to hear from me as their legislator and to really get insight onto how serious the problem is, what the solutions might be, and, you know, in the forum that we had last night, the opportunity to really, in a smaller, more informal setting, have the ability to sort of bat back and forth ideas, suggestions, and really have a good dialogue on the whole subject.
So the fiscal picture, just to kind of paint it, is right now our budget stands at about $4.3 billion. Our money that we take in at the state is $1.2 million. So there's about a $3.1 billion with a B gap. And that kind of hole doesn't fill itself. So Governor Walker has just recently vetoed several things, including cutting the dividend in about one half. He also postponed paying off some oil and gas credits to some companies. And then he shrunk a couple of budgets across the state in different departments. Where does that change us? Are we still at $3.1 billion in gap after that? Or what does that do for this year's fiscal situation?
Yeah, the projected gap for the current fiscal year that we're in is $3.1 billion, give or take movement in the price of oil, perhaps you know, an uptick or maybe even a downturn in oil production, things of that nature. So we're going into the 2017 legislative session with, again, about a year's worth of savings left to fund government, absent, you know, huge budget reductions and seeking out of new revenues. And again, it's an issue that that I think Alaskans need to be educated on, and people here in Sandpoint, I hope, can get a good sense after my visit, and certainly you know, I think a lot of folks are already very much in tune with it of what we need to do to help make to get a sustainable budget in the future.
So nothing really happened this last legislative cycle within the legislature itself, but let's just add, I would be curious, two things. One, as you go to the various communities, what are you hearing people say is their desire and how they think that it should be fixed? And two, what do you think should be done to fix this?
Well, I would say that we did do some things this past session. We continued to downsize the budget. The budget the last 3 years has been downsized by about 44%. Some of that is a reduction in oil tax credits. Other reductions have taken place in the line agencies and just the overall spending of the state. The capital budget on the state contribution side has gone down quite a bit. So I think the legislature has been more proactive than a lot of people realize. And I certainly don't say that in any defensive way, because the legislature didn't act contrary to my personal wishes and everything I tried to put forward as a legislator. But we didn't get a fiscal plan sort of put into place last session. But I think, in a way, there's a silver lining of that, because it does allow legislators like myself additional time to go out and talk to our communities and to sort of engage people into a issue that seemingly over the last, you know, ever since oil started flowing through the pipeline, all the boom and bust periods that we've had, you know, it's territory that we visited before. Oil has dropped down back in 1986 to very low levels. We were then rescued by an upsurge in prices, the same in the early 1990s, early 2000s. We've always been rescued by the price of oil because we had enough oil running through the pipeline, to make the difference. Now we don't have that option unless there's some miracle out there. The price of oil rebounds to $100 plus a barrel, or we find a huge reservoir of oil up in the North Slope, which most people, don't think is going to happen. So some big choices. We have ways to manage our way through this, and I just want to make sure that people here in Sandpoint and elsewhere throughout the district have an opportunity to kind of look through my eyes and see what some of those choices can be to get to, you know, sustainable budget.
So what would you say are the top choices right now? What are you looking at as a legislature, and what are the people of your community looking at?
Well, I think the first thing is to get people educated about the fiscal situation. By the day, it seems more people are understanding sort of the gravity of the situation. But at this point, I think in my own view, it's going to be a combination of all of the above. I don't like having to be party to reducing the dividend. I think that that's the most regressive form that we can take in terms of filling that fiscal gap, is to take the dividend, to sort of have the dividends in a, you know, somebody's in a from the household economy, and do the same to somebody who makes a lot of money, let's say in Anchorage, on a percentage basis, that really is meaningless to their overall income.
And there's some progressive ways to address that issue, though, are there not? Where maybe you make the amount that is diverted from a family based on income to a certain extent, like, you know, the dividend. I've heard of some plans that were not just cutting a flat rate off the dividend, but turning it into a place where you could get a credit. So for a family that brings in much less than another family, they would be able to get a credit towards their dividend, and they would bring in more. They would keep a greater portion of the dividend than, say, someone who really doesn't need it. And I say need in the strict sense, fiscally speaking.
Well, there was a bill last session, House Bill 365, that was introduced by Representative Paul Seaton at Homer. I co-sponsored it, but it was a sort of creative way of allowing lower income households to keep more of their dividend, or perhaps their entire dividend, by attaching an income tax to the dividend recipients, the permanent fund, essentially. The more money one would make, the more of your dividend you'd pay taxes on. And that was a proposal that didn't get a lot of traction. But, you know, by way of looking back at when the permanent fund dividend was created in 1982, it took Governor Hammond and legislative leaders many years to get the permanent fund dividend into place, because it was a very novel concept at the start. And so who knows? I mean, that's an idea that I'd like to explore a little bit more next session. I'm not sure if the support will be there, but look, we have a year's worth of savings. We have to try something. Otherwise, we're going to be cutting things like education in such a way that it's going to be endangering the operations of our schools.
So some people feel that going on, and we'll divert after this, but some people feel like this is a money grab. You know, it's a power grab by the state to take the dividend, and they feel it is the people's money. What are your thoughts regarding that? Is this the people's money? Do you view it in that light? I know no one wants it to happen, but there is a lot of opposition because of that kind of mindset.
Well, I think it's a question that Alaskans are going to have to address. You know, what is the intent of the permanent fund and of the earnings that come from the corpus of the fund itself? What are we going to use it for? Are we going to use it for bigger dividends today that may not be sustainable, because eventually we're going to have to use some of the earnings reserved for essential services? Or, do we do as Governor Walker's proposed, of sort of downsize the dividend today and keep it at a number which has been pretty close to the overall historical mean of the 34 years we've had a dividend? It's about $1,100, $1,200. Do you reduce it to that size and then have a better chance of keeping that dividend sort of into perpetuity, if all things being equal? And, I'm listening to my constituents. I'm hearing what they have to say, and I'm taking that back to Juno with me. And again, back to the earlier point that by taking additional time, I'm getting a lot more input from my constituents. Nobody has to tell me how important the dividend is to people out in Bush, Alaska. I live out in Bush, Alaska. I get it. I know how expensive things are out here. But at the same time, we have a multi-billion-dollar gap that we have to fill somehow. And if we don't, then we're going to, again, see major reductions in the services and the programs that make our communities whole.
So $670 million vetoed on the permanent fund this year that goes into the fund, which is great, but it's definitely not $3.1 billion. What other means do you see to increase revenue from other outlets? Because from what I understand, a lot of people feel, you hear people talk about cutting the budget. You know, it's an inflated budget. But when you look at the figures that you showed last night at the town hall, you see that $1.2 billion is eaten up, and that's all the revenue that we have, is eaten up by K-12 education, and that's extremely important. And then after that, it's human health and services. And these aren't areas where there's a lot of wiggle room for cut, in my personal view, and I know some people may differ from that, but it sounds like that there is going to need to be revenue from other sources. So we can get $670 million this year from the permanent fund, which is helpful, but obviously that leaves another area for revenue that's needed. Where else do you think would be a good way for that to happen?
Well, I think it's got to be a combination approach of, like the governor proposed, of continuing to downsize spending, to reduce spending, to look for revenues outside the oil industry, and then use some of the earnings from the permanent fund, whether it's a smaller amount that keeps the dividend fully intact, or whether it's, as the governor's proposed, maybe a larger amount, some $700 million, that would help sort of bridge that gap between what we're bringing in this year, and be mindful that 1.2 is projected revenues for this fiscal year. It could increase if the price of oil goes up, and again, if production somehow surges, that number could go up. It also could go down as well. So you've got cuts to government, you've got a tax package that the governor proposed last year.
And like then, a sales tax, or what would you feel?
It could be anything.
Tax?
Sales, statewide tax, the governor proposed taxes on the industries, sin taxes, cigarettes, alcohol, things of that nature. It's tough territory, and the legislature hasn't had to deal with this for many years.
Is there one that you like the most?
I don't know if like is the right word.
Of course, yeah. Is there one that you would think would be the best for Alaska? A kind of tax that you feel would serve Alaska the best?
Well, as I'm making my way through the district, I hear a lot of support for a statewide income tax, mm-hmm. a tax that people can deduct from their federal withholdings, that they can, can be partially paid by non-residents, and that can be a graduated tax that treats the wage earners on the lower part of the spectrum hits them less than it does for somebody who makes a lot more money. I'm hearing a lot of support for that. I've heard some support for a statewide sales tax. But communities like Sandpoint and elsewhere that already have a municipal sales tax, in my view, I think that would be unfair to have that sort of a statewide sales tax and then a local sales tax. Again, it's a tough conversation. Nobody likes doing any of this stuff. But like we saw last night, you show people the numbers. You show people where we're at with what we're spending right now. And I think people are willing to step up and make some tough choices.
Yeah, absolutely. And with a statewide income tax, it's important to note that I've heard that roughly up to, you know, several tens of percents, up to 40% would be paid from non-residents of Alaska, because you have people coming up and traveling who work the pipeline, who fish, all these other means of revenue, and they come to our country, they come to our state, and they do great things, and they help build the economy, but then they don't pay for any of the taxes, and so this would be a good way of doing that,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps maybe like a summertime sales tax for tourism, maybe like an on-off tax that increases during summer. You know, I've heard people speak about that, but ways that we can have it so that way people who come and utilize Alaska that aren't residents it can also help continue growing the communities. So, well, it is election time. We have, 8 weeks or something like that till election. It's right around the corner, and District 37 is a seat that is up for grabs this cycle, and you have your name in the hat?
Yeah, I'm running for what would be my sixth term as a legislator. And I'm running because I think with the fiscal situation before us, now more than ever, our communities need a legislator with experience. The past 6 years, I've sat on the House Finance Committee. I'm the senior rural member in the House, and I'm one of the more senior members on the Finance Committee, the committee that makes the budget decisions, and essentially is the executive committee, if you will, of the House. I think it's these next couple of years are going to be really important to Alaska's future and how we, again, fund the programs and services that are so important to us out here. And, that briefly is why I'm running.
Mm-hmm. And there is going to be, you know, obviously some people on the Republican ticket, and I think there's a write-in candidate as well, but you'll also be there coming in, Representative Edgemond. And is there anything else that you would like to say to the people of your communities about anything, including the reason why you're running is to serve the community? Is there anything else that you'd like to say?
Well, I've known a lot of the local leaders for, I would say, the last for about 25 years. Before I was a legislator, I worked in the legislature as a legislative staff member. So I have known Mayor Mack, and others here in the community for many, many years. I've developed really good personal and professional relationships with people in the community. Actually fished out of Sandpoint back in 1993. I've spent time here in the community. And, I'm sticking my neck out a little bit politically by bringing this whole issue of the fiscal situation, but I think my constituents would expect nothing less of me to show that type of leadership. And, I'm hopeful that people will appreciate that I'm being candid about the situation. I'm showing people the choices that we have out there and really engaging them on a topic that, we've not had to address for some 40, 50 years, and that is having to raise revenues outside of the oil industry in a state that has grown to depend on one industry for essentially all of its state government funding.
Mm. So obviously the permanent fund and the fiscal situation is dominant when it comes to the discussion on a political level in Alaska right now. But there's lots of other priorities that people, especially in our communities, have. Things like the Alaska Marine Highway and Ferry System, education, and just the current epidemic that's sweeping our nation for opioid addiction. Representative Edgemond, is there anything that you would like to share to the constituents regarding these topics, your priorities, and things that are happening?
Well, regarding the Marine Highway System, it's a huge priority of mine to keep the funding intact that allows for ferry service for part of the year. for Sandpoint and the other communities within the Lucian East Eastern Borough. The Marine Highway System right now is essentially under attack by those who think that it consumes too much of the Department of Transportation's budget, and it's too much of the ferry system is subsidized throughout the state. And so from that, there is a group effort, a statewide working group, to come up with a plan to sort of reconfigure the Marine Highway System, downsize it, but to keep it viable nonetheless, and keep the areas served that need to be served and that have been served over the years. Where that goes, something I'm going to be keeping a very close eye on. And like I say, keeping the funding intact for the current service is the first priority. Speaking of education, that was a big part of our discussion last night on the budget, and how education essentially is, along with health and social services, about half of our current budget in Alaska today. So protecting that amount and keeping it intact, recognizing that it's more expensive in every facet of providing public education out in Bush, Alaska, that's something that I'm definitely focusing a lot of my time on. And then the drug issue, an issue that we seem to take two steps backwards every time we try to do something about it, and we don't seem to make any headway on. That issue is perhaps the most perplexing of them all, and it's an issue that Sandpoint, I think, has been a real leader on in terms of a community showing what it can do when it bands together, but nonetheless, the problem still exists. So on a statewide level, I'm working hard to make sure that we have as much funding into public safety as possible, into what little bit of services that we provide on the treatment side of things, which clearly we don't do enough. And then also working on the creative end of things. Is there a way that we can work with a term like reasonable suspicion and make that more amenable to encouraging more arrests for those that ply in the drug trade, those that sell drugs, those that really are a menace to our societies. And, if there's one issue, putting the budget aside for a moment, but if there's one issue that's a common denominator outside of commercial fishing in House District 37, it's the local concern about the proliferation of drugs. It's in every community that I've gone to thus far. So I'll be working with the governor and with the various agencies, communities, to continue doing whatever we can to address this issue. I think people know there's no easy or immediate answer out there. It's going to be a combination of a lot of things, including a community resolve to make a dent in this problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one, like you said, it's one of the most perplexing, because it's a matter of supply and demand, and attacking the supply seems to be one of those things like holding on to a handful of sand, but demand is even more confusing. And how do you address the desire for these things, and how do you treat that and help people get through that? So I know that a lot of people appreciate that, and like you said, it is the common denominator in these communities. But we'll see how it goes, and we appreciate all your work on these topics.
Well, again, it's been a real a good trip for me, a brief trip. I wish I could have stayed longer, but just coming through town and catching up with old friends, people I haven't seen in a few years, and those that I visit with and work with regularly down in Juneau, it's been a huge benefit to me, and I really appreciate the time that I've had today here at the radio station.
That's Representative Bryce Edgemond. He is running for District 37 seats for his sixth term, and also discussing some very important topics on revenue and the state budget. Representative Edgemond, thank you so much for your time and service. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure, Austin. Glad to be here.